Welcome to the Remote Teacher Podcast. We're excited to have you here. I'm Heike Hustler, an experienced regional, rural and remote teacher, author of children's, middle and YA books and co-creator of the Facebook group Teachers in Remote Communities, Past, Present and Future, along with Carl Merrison and Lynette Gordon, and the co-owner of website The Remote Teacher. The Remote Teacher Podcast and all our support platforms come from a passion to improve the experience of remote teachers and in turn create positive outcomes for our remote students and communities. You can find out more about us on www.theremoteteacher.com.au, over on our Facebook group, Teachers in Remote Communities, Past, Present and Future, and of course by listening to this podcast. Now remember, you can also download these podcasts so you don't need internet access and you can listen to them wherever you need, including on your long drives out to your remote and rural communities. Please remember to like us on Facebook, on Instagram, and by signing up to our email list. And before I introduce our guest for today, it's important to acknowledge that the discussions that we have here are the opinion of the guest and myself alone and do not represent anyone, including Department of Education or any particular organisation. Unless, of course, they've come on stating that they're representing that organisation.
It's also important to consider
First Nation peoples, communities, students and families are all diverse and unique, and what works for our guest and myself may or may not work for you, your students, your families, your communities and your schools. So take what you need, leave what you don't, sit back and enjoy. Let's begin. Welcome to Susan Maidman. Thank you so much for taking the time. First of all, we'll do an acknowledgement to country. I'd like to acknowledge the traditional custodians on the lands of which we meet today, the Bundjalung people of the Northern Rivers, New South Wales region where I am, and the Noongar people of the Whadjuk Nation where Susan is coming from today for this interview. We pay our respects to their elders past, present and emerging, and extend that respect to any First Nations people listening along with our podcast today. Welcome, Susan. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your personal and professional journey before you went remote?
Okay, well, thank you for having me. So my journey is a very strange one, which led me to Warrakoona in the remote school there. I started teaching in London in an inner city, teaching very young children. And when we returned, so my husband is British and we had our two kids there. And then when we returned to Australia, I knew I would have to retrain as a teacher because of the way I got into teaching in England. It wasn't recognised here, which is fine. So I went back to uni in Sydney with two very young children. And I remember when I was in maybe my third year, there were some opportunities to go remote in New South Wales, but it might actually have been Northern Territory, and do your prac in a remote community. And I was umming and ahhing about doing it. I really wanted to, but I was aware that our kids were very little, below seven, two kids below seven, and I didn't really want to go away for that length of time and leave my husband. I was definitely umming and ahhing about it. No, the timing was not right, and I was really disappointed when everyone came back and had an amazing time and really enjoyed themselves. I was like, oh, I should have just done it anyway.
It sparked your passion or your interest.
Yeah, it did, and I remember doing some group work in a literacy unit, and we really looked into English as an additional language or dialect and how students in remote areas, Indigenous students, how they were learning and what was working really well, and just different things that people had tried. So I was, really interested in learning more. After I finished my degree, we ended up moving back to Perth, which is where I'm from and all my family are. And again, the idea popped up of going remote. I was at a careers fair at Curtin University. So I decided to do some postgrad study just to get myself I don't know. I couldn't give up study. I don't know. It's haunting me. There was a seminar, and I almost didn't go because I didn't think it was, again, timing wise, was right. Mm-hmm. Because we'd literally just moved to Perth, but I did. So I'm glad I did. And it was a fellow from the education department in WA discussing remote opportunities, and it just sounded really exciting, and I was definitely ready. So I put it to my husband and I suggested, you know, what about this? What about this? What do you think? And I know he had been he'd been working all the while since we'd had kids. So I'd been off work studying or, you know, looking after the kids. And I think he was feeling a little bit burnt out in what he was doing. It was getting quite high pressure and long hours, and he was, you know, having the Sunday evening blues. And I was like, well, maybe this is a chance for me to be the one working and you rest and do something different. So, you know, we talked about it, and he was really quite nervous about how it would go. I think he was mostly worried about what would the kids do, you know, after school? What would they do? What would they get up to? Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because I'd been kind of worried and noticed that the kids had, since we moved to Perth, we got an Xbox, so they were spending a lot more time on computers, I just wanted a bit of a change. So
and how old were your children when you made the big decision?
In year 4 and year 3.
So how did it go when you broached the topic of a big move with kids in grade 4 and grade 3?
So it was at the dinner table, and I mean, we had literally just done a very big move. You know, we drove across from Sydney to Perth, so maybe they were kind of used to that. But we were at the dinner table, and I was like, oh, you know, guess what? Mum's got a new job. and they were like, oh, okay, that's great. And I was like, and here's the map of Australia, and here's where it is. And they're like, oh, okay.
Wow.
Yeah, there had to be some visuals in there for them to understand. But, you know, they were really good about it. They were interested in the move. You know, they certainly weren't against it. They were, they really liked the idea of having their dad at home all the time with them. So the idea was for him to do School of the Air with them and be their home tutor. So
finding that work-life balance, that family time balance, was a big incentive for your family.
Yes, definitely.
So what did you have to do then to scaffold and support? Because I know this is a big question. Moving with kids to remote communities in general is a big question. But then there's the questions around, like, scaffolding and supporting and helping your children with the transition, not just up there, but then like settling in and finding their way in a community and a culture and language that's so different than theirs. How did that all play out?
Oh, I don't know if we had any particular plan. I think it just all happened as we went. We talked to them a lot about, you know, just how the journey would go. We involved them, I guess, in the trips to the car yard or the car shop where we'd buy all these items because we were going to be traveling on an unsealed road
So the build up, the excitement was there because you were getting bits and pieces and
we're doing little bits at a time, and then there was the packing and deciding. So I guess there was a bit of a lead in from, I think I got the job in October, beginning of November, and a bit of a lead in until we got there. And I had been up I went up in December just for a week to see what it was like, have a look at the housing, because there were two options for housing. And even before getting the job, I completed two stints of relief work up in the Kimberley, so that was really helpful. And one of those was in a community and one of those was based outside of the community in Fitzroy Crossing. And after doing both of those, I was really definite that I wanted to work in a community. And so I was able to explain a little bit about what it would be like and tell them what they had in the community. You know, there's a swimming pool, there was a shop, and just, yeah, describe it to them a little bit.
Wonderful.
There was a bike track, and yeah, it
I
was,
was sold
I
on the
guess,
bike track. I can
yeah,
imagine.
although the first time they used the bike track, there were loads of prickles, so the tires got flat. But anyway, there's loads of prickles out there.
So note to listeners, you can, and perhaps to you, Susan, I'm not sure, but you can get this this spray that you spray into the tires, the to take away the air to make it like a foam inside the tires so they don't get
Ah,
popped.
the
Like a,
green stuff, the
I don't know
green
what it
goo.
is. Yeah, it's
Yeah,
something that stops the pops.
yeah, sounds good.
So all the little things you've got to think about when you're transitioning with children. But I like what you said, Susan,
Absolutely.
about that you had the opportunity to do a couple of shorter stints up in remote communities, because people who have children or are not sure if remote's for them, that's a great way to experience it without, like, you're helping out, you're doing the relief, you're being there, you're taking off some of the load for the teachers that are there, and you're also getting a chance to see it. So that was a great way to do it.
Absolutely. And one of the teachers out there who I was relieving, she had children herself and she was a single mum. And I think her experience really helped me see that it was possible. Like, I asked her a lot of questions. I asked lots of people lots of questions in the build up. Listening to a podcast like this would have been really helpful back then. But you navigate it as you go through. So yeah, definitely finding out from other people how it works. And it is possible. And yeah, I know I've noticed on the Facebook page that a lot of people ask, I've got kids, how will it go? And you don't know until you try, but I'm sure it will be fine.
It's one of the really common questions, isn't it? And I think it's because, like, graduates are obviously free to run up and go and explore without their commitment. People who are after their children have left home have that flexibility, but you've got this whole period of your life where you still want to live you and do you and advance your career or experience new things, and it's just finding that balance or that way in, or whether it's right for your family and safe for your family and good for your family. All those questions and considerations you have to think about when you've got little people. So fair
Yeah,
enough. I guess
absolutely.
the other questions that we had then, because we're very excited to have you to explain these kind of things, you chose School of the Air for your children. How did that operate? How did they go making friends when they were School of the Airing, and then, going out into community and hanging out with kids? How did School of the Air work for your children?
So we did it through Kalgoorlie School of the Air, and they're our nearest. But we're definitely the furthest away from that school of the air. I don't know. I think I just rang them up and enrolled them. It was a very easy process to get them on the books. So all their school info came through in boxes. It was all very paper-based. I don't know if things have changed much or if they're different in different school of the airs, but a lot of resources and project work and term work would come in boxes. We picked some of that up in Kalgoorlie. And there were lessons, I think a half hour lesson for each child each day on the computer, which we were a little bit surprised about. I don't know what we thought was going to happen. I think Neil, my husband, thought that it would be all online all the time. And he would do very little, but in fact, with School of the Air, it's online just a little part, and he was coaching them and getting them to, do the
The
work,
project.
and yeah, he was really their teacher, with very little training. They did have a couple of camps and information for the home tutors, which I think he found helpful. And he met up with a lot of the other home tutors. There are a lot of kids doing School of the Air who are on stations, like cattle stations. The camps were amazing, and the kids made good friends. Lucinda, my daughter, one of her best friends, she met through School of the Air. We're from the suburbs, and they both got to hang out with kids who lived on ranches and who did really totally different things to what you would do in the suburbs. So it was very it was really good for them to have that experience, I think. And I think partly why I wanted us to go out was so that they could experience a different way of life from what they were used to. Because I know I grew up completely in suburbia and didn't do anything different my whole schooling career, and I wanted something a little different for the kids.
And they adapted well to that. They obviously found best
Yeah,
friends,
they
but they
did.
adapted.
I think their first year they had a lot of fun. That I don't know. They just seemed to really enjoy it their first year. The camps. They went on a camp to Canberra, which was just crazy. Yeah, so they became quite independent quite quickly in some ways, and they became better friends because they really did just have the two of them. They did socialize a little bit in the community at the beginning. They had a hall, and there was a youth worker who would open the hall in the evenings. But pretty soon the youth worker left and wasn't replaced, which is a huge
Challenge,
issue.
yes.
It's really detrimental for the whole community.
And when we talk, the stigma of crime rates or things like that, if we don't fund or hire or support youth workers in community or youth engagement officers or, after school activities, what can we expect?
Yes,
A
that could
big
be a whole
challenge.
other podcast.
Indeed. Just taking a short break from our deadly interview with our guest today to remind you of some resources that might be really handy in your remote outback classroom, including Kyle Merrison and my books, Black Cockatoo, My Deadly Boots, Tracks of the Missing, and his book coming out, Backyard Footy. We also have a range of other books coming out across the next couple of years, so keep an eye out. We also create book packs so you can study these books with your students. We take out all the hard work and we create done for you resources so you can pick up and go, reducing your workload and time spent preparing your lessons. They are comprehensive and differentiated and ready to go for diverse needs of diverse learners, including your ESLD students in remote communities. We also have a TPT store, The Remote Teacher, that we'd love to share some resources with you, including things like NAIDOC week resources, book packs, yarning circles, getting to know you activities, and much more. So head over there to check it out. Now let's get back to this deadly interview. But your children
Absolutely.
had the opportunity to get out and explore. Did they ever get to go to the stations of their School of the Air friends?
Yeah, they did. Oh, and one time Lucinda came back and said, "I want a lake, I want a boat, and I want to go biscuiting," which is
On the back
something.
of a boat, yeah, the blow up circle on the back of a boat, yeah,
I'm like,
fun.
"Sorry, we don't have a lake, we don't have a boat."
Well, just go buy one of those $1 million stations.
So yeah, they did have some interesting experiences.
So did they get access to the same kind of subjects? And like, was there that kind of differentiation? I know your partner was doing the hands-on teaching at home with them, but did School of the Air, extend your students, provide them what they needed?
Yes, I would say so. I think they pretty quickly realized that Lucinda needed to do more extensive reading, like at a higher level, and they adjusted that. I must say her first teacher was excellent, and we're actually still friends with her. You do make some very long-lasting friendships. But yeah, I think they were quite aware of where the kids were and where they needed to be pushed, because they're very, small classes.
Because I know this is one of the worries that parents moving remote have is, do I enroll them in the local school? Does the local school even go past year six? And if we choose School of the Air, like what are the logistics around that? How does that work? And then what? So you've kind of had to navigate that with your children too.
Yes, and I had spoken with my principal before going out and, trying to work out school or School of the Air. And he had, said from experience, it doesn't always work that well when teachers' kids are in the school, because, we have to be honest that the levels, I was teaching high school and there was a primary school class, and the reading levels are so low in the school that, you know, it just it on that respect, on the learning side, it wouldn't have worked for them. So yeah, School of the Air seemed to be the right option. I have seen there was a family in the community who the parents were in the health field, and the kids were doing School of the Air through Northern Territory, I think, but they actually went into the high school class and did some other work in the school. So, you know, there's all sorts of different options. And I guess if you discuss it with the principal, ask people what has happened before, think about, find something that works. You know, there's.
And the needs of your individual class vary quite a lot. I remember I had kids that were in year nine who were unable to read and write, and kids who were at level. So I had a class that had this very wide differentiation needs and learning gaps and unique attendance and behaviors. And I think those kind of things are the things you have to weigh up as a parent. But it also highlights an interesting point around the academic expectations that we have of our students in remote communities as well. We still, as teachers, not taking away the parent side now, we want our children to achieve and we want to push them to the highest that they possibly can. And it highlights the impact of things like teacher turnover, retention, and the varying expectations or skills of some teachers that go out there to cater for their needs, you know, science of reading or phonics or, you know, learning foundation English and all the way up. So that's an interesting point around where your children will fit academically in a classroom, but also then you've got the layers of not stereotyping anyone or painting anyone with the same brush, but in some communities you have students with high behavior needs or special needs, and so your teachers catering for all that and take catering for workers' children. It's a very interesting dynamic and interesting mix and interesting decision for you as a parent to have to make then.
And I think my principal was, you know, was aware of that, because it wouldn't have been me teaching them, it would have been the primary teacher, and to give her that extra workload of catering for my kids as well. It just wouldn't have, well, I'm assuming it wouldn't have worked, but maybe, who knows? And it does really depend on the situation and the age of the kids. And I've seen where it works really well that the kids are going, you know, if they're really quite young and going into kindy, you know, it can work well. And yeah,
And the learnings that
depends.
some kids can have from going into classes, you know, being immersed in the language or culture. But then again, the experiences that your children got to have by going on these excursions, meeting people from stations, making lifelong friends that way. So it's about what works for your family and your children, and then also like fitting into whatever the community is that you go to.
There's definitely not one size fits all, and you won't know until you get there, and things change when you're there. You know, I mean, certainly in the community I was in, there were a lot of connections with other communities, so there was a high transience level, and you know, kids were very comfortable in moving from one community to the other. So you know, for my own kids, you know, they might have friends that were there and then not there,
Not
and so
there.
you've also got that. And in fact, so my son did year four, no, year five and year six, and then he decided, partly based on discussions with his friend from School of the Air, that he wanted to do boarding school for years seven and eight. Which was like, I was not expecting that, and I had just thought he would carry on with in WA, it's School of Isolated and Distance Education. I thought he would do that. But he was like, I don't want to be on a computer all the time. I don't want to do that. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, this is, yeah, really
So what was
surprised
that
me.
like for you and the family
Very
in making
hard.
this? Yes. Because it's
Very
such
hard
a
at the
young age to
beginning.
let them go. Like, I know First Nations people sometimes don't have high school, so they also have to make this challenging decision, and then you're not expecting to have to make it.
No, it was very surprising. And I'm generally quite cautious with him, with particularly when he thinks about something, we go very slowly just in case, you know, he's going to change his mind. We don't want to push him one way or the other. And he kept asking, can we have a look at that website? Can we do this? Yeah, can we see what the school's like? And off he went to Esperance. And
did you have family supports from Perth that could check on him or be around for him if you needed when you weren't?
We actually had some friends from School of the Air whose kids were there, and because they'd moved there, but, you know, not family or not close friends. So,
I remember
the build up. So worried about who would hug my boy at night.
Yes.
But, you know, I feel like he's all grown up now, very independent, which is exciting.
So I wonder then what kind of hints and tips around the choice to send to the community school or School of the Air, and then School of the Air and boarding school, what kind of tips or hints or kind of tidbits do you have for teachers that are faced with this same decision right now?
I would definitely speak to your principal about what's happened at the school in the past with previous teachers and their children, and also ask them, you know, if there's anyone in community, because principals will know if they've been there a while what's happened. Everyone knows everyone's movements. So, yeah, there's always someone in the community you could ask or you could be put in contact with. But also just think about all the logistics of it. So particularly with boarding school, it was a long drive from Warrakoona to Esperance, but that was closer than going all the way to Perth. So, just think about how is it going to work. And I definitely did worry about that, and how we were going to pick up Henry, because, you know, as a teacher, you can't leave until the end of the term. So how do you get this child? Just see what options. Like, definitely for boarding school, the bus service is pretty good if there's a bus running, you know, to your location, of getting the kids put on, but knowing that they're on there's a form you sign about that, so they're aware that this is an unaccompanied minor, and who's going to pick them up. And so, and my dad was able to pick up Henry a couple of times in Perth. I would just ask questions, just, you know, and ask, well, I would never have asked Henry if he wanted to go to boarding school. So that might come up. I don't know. Yeah. Just be, I guess, open to all sorts of opportunities. Mm. Yeah. What is going to happen? You'll go in expecting, and then something else might happen. So very strange.
Mm. Your family also had some very big challenges when you were out remote with health and healthcare and access to that. Would you like to talk about that?
Sure. Yep. And definitely something you wouldn't expect. So when Lucinda was 11, she was in year six, and she'd had some what we thought were growing pains, you know, in term one, in her hip. And we went to, we didn't feel the need to see the clinic in Warrakoona about it, but we were like, oh yeah, we'll get it checked up when we're in the holidays. So that was only a few weeks later. And when we got it checked up, and we went to the physio, and the physio, I credit with saving her life, because he said, you need to go and get an x-ray. It could be something quite serious. And the x-ray said, right, you need to go and see the doctor today. And, you know, and she had the x-ray on Friday, and that night she was in hospital getting tests, you know, prepared for a week of tests. And it turned out she had a bone cancer in her pelvis, which, who would imagine?
Totally. Who would even have thought? Yeah.
Yeah. So if anyone's listening, growing pains, if they keep going, get them checked out, you know, because it's, yeah, if it's treated early as hers was, you know, she's fine. She's been, you know, in remission for almost a year. And it's very quick growing, very aggressive. We were really very
Lucky that the
lucky to
physio
get
had, known
that.
to refer you on. So what was that
I know.
like then? You'd mentioned when we chatted or text before that you had to spend time apart, that she was with your husband.
Yes. Yes. So Henry was in his first year at Esperance. So
Oh, as
in
well.
one way, that made things a little bit easier because he was in one spot and, that was
Safe in
another
one.
person's, out of the equation. I was able to stay for about 6 weeks in Perth with Lucinda. And school were amazing. My principal and the executive principal and just everyone was really just amazing, just very helpful. And I always felt like they're my second family. So when I did have to go back, because I wanted to save some leave for later when we thought she would have surgery, in term two, I just I felt okay about going back. I knew that there wasn't a lot that I could do in Perth that Neil wasn't doing. So we had secured a little place in Ronald McDonald House, and they are amazing.
Oh, good. So he
I
was able
yes.
to stay there. You didn't have to worry about
Yeah.
finances or locations. He was there with her.
No,
You were
he was
back.
there, and I guess in one way it was good that he wasn't stopping work. Like we weren't relying on two incomes. He does have a blog page that he, I guess, put on hiatus for, for the time that she was ill. But he really wasn't able to do that. So mentally wasn't in the right space. So yeah, it was very strange. And I know some people are like, oh, why did you come back? Or, wouldn't you just stay? But there wasn't, I couldn't do a lot. He was there and he was looking after her, and it was very hard when she was, really, really sick, and the treatment was taking its toll. And it was quite strange, but yeah, we got through it. So things
So
that were
pleased.
difficult were more bureaucratic. Just because we're in a remote community, so there was a particular a health group that operated, and there was like a, what is it, MOU, some memorandum of understanding, that
Oh,
they
yes.
would look after, agency workers in the community for like acute care, nothing long standing. And so initially it was difficult to access PATS, which is patient,
Transport something, access and
yes,
transport
transport.
service,
They help you with the transport when you're remote or regional. So it was difficult to access them just purely through the bureaucratic way of the original question, whereas it should have just been done through Kalgoorlie Health Service rather than through the land. So
And you also
that
don't
was
know what you don't know or who to track
no.
down for like things that you're entitled to, so that PATS, how are you meant to know that it's going to take longer or not take longer or shouldn't take longer?
You really, it's a minefield. But I must say the Ronald McDonald people were so helpful, and just put me right at ease. So they were really good in that sort of advocacy area.
So if people are considering going remote and they're worried about healthcare for their children, knowing that there's Ronald McDonald House that you can rely on to be a place to stay if you have to go to the big cities, that's good to know. And your local health service were supportive, the small clinic?
Well, they really didn't have anything to do with her initial diagnosis because
They're on the school.
we didn't see them about it. And I think because of Pat's, like, the process, I believe, is you need to get your doctor referral not within Perth, but out of Perth. I mean, anyone will need to check this up for themselves. So they're just, difficulties. Yes.
Did she come back after being sick? Are you still remote? Yes.
So when I returned in December, so really she was in hospital, in and out of hospital from April to December of 21, and then we came back in 2022, and my son went back to boarding school, so it was kind of just normal. She originally was going to go to boarding school, but after this, we decided no, that wasn't going to happen.
So has she had to have any ongoing care in community now?
She's had 3 month and 6 month and 9 month scans, and you know, Pats were helpful with the travel too, and Ronald McDonald again were helpful with staying there. But now we're back in Perth, so I've finished 4 years. So now it's that sort of Pat's chapter has finished, which
Are you on your long service
is
leave
easier.
now?
I'm on my remote
Awesome.
leave, yes.
So you get to
So
have your time, relaxing and recovering from what that was a really tough mentally time, no doubt.
yes. Yeah, and I don't know that I've processed it quite yet because, you know, going back into your last year, you're trying to get all the things done that you wanted to do, and you're aware that it's your final year, so you're also quite sad. And yeah, the last year's, well, I certainly found it a tough one,
But I
definitely.
think your story is really important to tell because it highlights many of the challenges that people who are deciding whether to take their kids remote face, like that healthcare, how they're going to be educated, school of the air, where they're going to fit, and how they're going to make it work. So that's really important to tell. Is there anything that you'd like to share in like kind of a wrapping up kind of way or anything else that you'd like to share about?
Oh, I would just say go for it. If anyone's thinking about it, go for it. And all the planning, you can do as much planning as you want, but you still don't know what's going to happen when you get out there. And that's part of the excitement, I think, that it's anything could happen, good or bad, but you just don't know. It's so
And I think what
exciting.
you've shown is that like you can roll with the punches, that everything's o can be overcome, that remoteness isn't a barrier to
No,
anything.
definitely not. And when you're out there, you're not remote. You're right in the middle of the community. And yeah, coming back to Perth feels remote. So when you're out there, you're there, and you don't even notice, I think, that you're in the middle of so much land.
You're in
You're
community,
just
you're
there.
immersed in community.
Yeah,
And I think I really
totally immersed.
liked chatting to you, hearing you talk about the strength that your children have had, like the independence that your son has developed and the confidence and the friendships that your daughter has created, those kind of benefits for them of the time as well.
And I do hope they look back on their time in such an unusual community, you know, for them. I hope they look back on it with fondness.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us, Susan.
Ah, you're welcome. My pleasure.
Each podcast episode, we also try and highlight or spotlight or do a shout out for amazing businesses, organizations, groups, and services that are working in remote communities. This could be run or owned by First Nations people or services that regularly are committed to going into remote communities and listening and working with First Nations people. So here is our shout out and spotlight for this episode. Now,
You've been
well, our
listening to the
Spotlight
Remote
Organisational
Teacher
Podcast, the
Business isn't
podcast
always
where we
related to
discuss
the
all
topics
things
discussed
remote
by
by
our
our
guests
guests in our
Make sure you follow
podcast
us on
episodes.
Facebook,
And well,
Instagram,
Susan
join
did
our
use the
email
Royal
list
Flying Doctor
and our
Service. I
Facebook
think it's a
group,
perfect
Teachers
one to
in
highlight
Remote
for this
Communities,
episode.
past,
For
present,
the
and future,
Royal Flying
any
Doctor
important
Service
links
flies
mentioned
in
or
our
businesses
patients
or
from remote
organizations
communities
to
to
support
be
your remote
named. And it
teaching.
might be
And
our
I'll get
guest
to mention
mentioned
these of
today
parents who
will
are
be in the
considering
show notes,
teaching in
so
remote
make sure you have a look
communities.
at them
It actually
to find out
started
more.
when
And a
Stockman
reminder
Jimmy
again, this
Darcy
podcast podcast
had
internal injuries.
So you can access it when you do not have internet
over
coverage or reception. So you can
and
listen to it on your long drives to
have
communities in the outback.
Medical service.
Thank you for listening.
So the Royal Flying Doctor Service uses the latest in aviation, medical, and communications technology to provide emergency medical and primary healthcare services to anyone who lives, works, and travels in rural and remote Australia. With a waiting room of over 7.69 million square kilometres, the Royal Flying Doctor Service provides 24-hour aeromedical emergency services that can reach anywhere, no matter how remote, within hours. They combine this with their telehealth consultations, fly-in, fly-out GPs and nurse clinics, mobile dental services, patient transfers, and heaps of other health services. They're constantly working to see the lives of people in rural and remote areas enjoy the same health outcomes as those living in city areas, a work in progress. The Royal Flying Doctor Service is a registered charity and relies on donations of people around Australia to help support the vital work that they do. So if you'd like to learn more about the Royal Flying Doctor Service, visit flyingdoctor.org.au.